folks. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant. This is Now We're Talking. In studio with me, as always, is Keith Kennedy. Keith, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm relieved. I'm very relieved. I don't want to occupy too much time talking about this because I don't know how many of our listeners are sports fans.
My wife definitely is. That's a joke.
Facetiousness.
Yeah, it's a joke because she loves Bill Burr, his comedy, but she can't listen to his podcast because he talks about baseball.
Yeah, no, then we're going to talk about baseball for a second because for me, as a child, the Blue Jays meant everything to me. And then like a lot of bandwagon jumpers after a 22-year sabbatical, last year when I recognized that they had a shot at making it to the postseason for the first time in 22 years, I got interested again, interested enough that this season I decided I'm going to pay attention come August. Obviously, I'm not going to, you know, spend spring training, April, May, June, July, caring about them. We're not going to be contenders.
Who has the time?
I do, but I just find that too intimidating to invest all that time and too heartbreaking. So I decided I was willing to be potentially heartbroken by investing 2 months. And that's what I did. I got interested in August. And then in September, it's really been heating up. So if you haven't been paying attention, it's been very competitive and a very close race with three other teams trying to make the two wild card spots. Four teams in particular. Only a couple of other teams were eliminated about a week or so ago. And this last week or two has been extremely stressful because they've kind of been falling apart. The Blue Jays have. These other teams have been pushing forward. Anyway, after a few days of needing them to win some games and needing the right other teams to lose, it's been incredibly stressful. But today, they won a hard-fought game just as they did last night. The right teams lost, and I can breathe this huge sigh of relief because I know that they're going to participate in the postseason by playing a wild card game on Tuesday. If they lose that game, I'll be very disappointed. But there's something about just knowing that they get the chance,
of course,
to play that one game. Yeah. Well, ask me about it next week, but I think that's... I was really worried I was going to have a really bad few weeks.
Well, that's the...
Knowing they didn't get that chance.
That's so the threshold.
I'm really relieved. And I need to acknowledge it because it's going... You're going to sort of hear that, I think, in my mood in this broadcast, but I'm so relieved.
Good, yeah. I understand. Of course, even if it's just a one-game shot, that's... historically, it's very hard to make the playoffs in baseball, and though they've adjusted over the years to go from having just two straight to the World Series to now having 10. Of course, if you're a fan of that team, you want to see them have that chance. And we know from being hockey fans, or at least Canadians, which is sort of synonymous, that getting in, man. There's a couple of years there where I remember Edmonton and Calgary got in, and it just getting in means you get hot.
Well, of course, with the NHL, and you want to talk about being a Canadian, wasn't it the first time in many, many years this past year where no Canadian teams made the playoffs?
It's happened
before, but I think it's rarely happened before, and I think it's been 20 years or something.
Yeah, it's been a long time. And that's...
And that was interesting because I think that did affect... I think a lot of Canadians love hockey enough that they maybe checked out the playoffs, but I don't think Canadians cared as much about the playoffs.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if people know that in the States or other hockey fans from other parts of the world, but Canadians have a tendency... I assume this is probably a global thing, but Canadians have a tendency to cheer for whichever team, right? So if you're normally a Winnipeg Jets fan, but, you know, they don't make it, then, and the Toronto's only team left, Toronto Maple Leafs, which of course would never happen, but if they're the only team left, then a lot of Canadians rally around the Canadian team that's left, and that was taken away from all those people.
We don't talk about sports a lot in the show. Early, if you were an early adopter of Now We're Talking, which you're now listening to, of course, on CITR 101.9 FM, then you'll know that we did have you roving in Europe for a brief period of time.
Yeah.
You covered the Euro Cup. There was Copa America, so there was some football stuff happening. But aside from that, we don't really touch on sports. People might not understand that you're quite big on sports. And this investment that I've made in the latter portion of the Blue Jays season is an investment that you make with multiple sports, with multiple teams. Yeah. Now, for me, as I say, I don't think you're like me in this, that for me, I think this is why I avoid caring about sports. I get really invested. Like I get really angry if things don't go well. Obviously, I get excited when things do go well, but like so badly that I don't think I can really cope with it.
It's funny.
You manage it better.
It's funny that you say that because I have a memory of one time you came to visit me and I was watching the World Juniors, which is the thing I get most invested in.
Okay. Hockey, we're talking.
Yeah, World Junior Hockey Championships, my favorite tournament of all tournaments. And It was a Canada-America. I think it was about 6 or 7 years ago. And the Americans won. And they won. They weren't the...
I was there. I watched the game with you?
Yeah, you came. I either watched the whole thing or you came before the end.
Okay.
And Canada was the better team at that time. That's not saying much. Sometimes in juniors, the Americans are quite strong. But in this case, the Canadians probably deserved to win it. And the Americans won it in overtime. And I'm not one to get really upset or angry or any of that stuff. But my reaction to that loss at the time, you thought was a bit strange. You couldn't connect to that stress that I felt.
I was surprised by how disappointed you were?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I don't think you were weird about it, but you asked me a few questions. Like, why do you feel it? Or why does it matter so much? And it's, so it's funny for me to hear you say now that you had a few stressful days waiting for the Blue Jays. Because I can relate to that.
What's the era here? 10 years ago, 20 years ago?
I think probably like 6 or 7 years ago.
As I say, there's this period of time between 1993 and 2015 where I didn't care about any sport or any team. And I think that allowed me to relieve myself of caring if anybody didn't win the right games or what have you. And probably I had that detached curiosity about anybody caring about any team or any
game. Right,
And now that, as of last year, now here we go again with the Blue Jays, now I'm being reintroduced to something that for me, like there's a lot of things you shed as you go through your adolescence. Mm-hmm. This is something I think I felt that I had shed.
Yeah.
And I'm now being humbled.
Yeah, milk money,
by now,
skin flakes.
If I was an angry pubescent boy when things didn't go right for the Blue Jays circa 91 or something, I'm a much larger, angrier man when things... Mm-hmm. I mean, basically what I've been doing for the past 2 days is while I was watching the Blue Jays games, but as I say, it's equally relevant. You want them to win the game, but it's just as valuable for the other team to lose. You know, it's equal. So I'm not just watching the Jays game. I'm monitoring the other games and really invested in the team losing. So yesterday, you should have seen me watching. So the Seattle Mariners were playing the Oakland Athletics and they went to extra innings. And you should have seen me, man, just like cussing at the TV and not even saying like, F you, Seattle Mariners. Like, F you and your aspirations to play. I'm literally like,
F you and your aspirations.
F you, Seattle. Just like, screw you. Just like, kind of jokingly, but just like...
But you're embracing
giving
it.
Giving the screen like the middle finger.
Yeah.
And just not like in a joking way, like anybody else is in the room and we're like, we're being jovial and jocular. No, like, I'm angry at that city for potentially impeding my ability to experience pleasure.
Yeah.
By having the team
I've
chosen.
There's a lot of people like that. And you're embracing that emotion, which can be very positive. It can be really fun to do that. That's why people go to games and get drunk and holler. It's not because they're horribly misbehaved people. It's because it's fun.
Now I'm curious, as we're having this conversation, I'm trying to think, obviously there's some nationalistic pride that's associated with Team Canada winning a hockey tournament we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But what about, aside from the nationalism, what about specific teams? Do you have specific teams that that's your team for that sport? What are those teams?
Do I?
Yeah.
Well, it's... I
know that you've got the Canucks are your team in hockey. Is that fair to say?
For sure.
Okay.
And
is that true of other sports, though?
Not so much. I'm definitely a fan of the sport first in a lot of sports.
Okay.
And so I often watch the highest quality version of that sport.
See, that makes it better. That makes it a lot better.
Yeah, it can. I mean,
because then you can adapt as the teams you're watching fall by the wayside. Oh, actually, I like this team too.
Yeah. Well, here's a thing that people, a lot of sports fans, don't agree with me on. Don't bother calling in. I know who you are. But a lot of people love, for example, college sports in the States because it can be very exciting. Young guys, crazy
lots
plays,
to prove.
Lots of and mistakes and improvisation. I don't like it so much. I like watching a really tightly played professional football game with a lot of running.
Sure.
like running plays.
Sure.
I don't go in for the flash of that. I really like. And so that alone puts me in a strange position where I'm just really liking the sport and the way the sport works. And so I like in football, for example, I'm a Miami Dolphins fan since I was a kid, but I'm just as likely to want to watch the Chargers and the Steelers, because that's to me a classic matchup for my youth.
So I want to understand this. Let's take the NFL example. So first of all, let's talk about your Miami Dolphin fandom.
Yeah.
Would you say that if you had to choose a team, they are your team?
Oh, most definitely. My favorite
and
player of all time.
And they have been your team, Dan Marino?
Dan Marino, yeah. Because
Isotoner?
No. But this is, I think, interesting as well, is I was a football player.
No, I'm asking if you want these Isotoner gloves.
Oh, yeah. I just assumed because you put them right there that I was.
Oh, you get them later.
Yeah,
sorry. Okay.
Want me to get them now?
You can leave them there. It's fine.
Okay.
It's cold, getting cold out. It's October.
I appreciate
now.
That. Yeah, okay. Thanks for thinking of me. There are no isotoner gloves.
No, they're not here.
This is how we do funny.
We'll get some later, though. Okay, so Dan Marino, but I want to understand this. So yeah. The Miami Dolphins, when the seasons transpire,
yeah.
And I'm sure there have been seasons in recent memory where the Dolphins are a horrible team.
Yeah.
What then? What happens then? Do you still track the NFL season?
No, and that's 14? A perfect example of where my fandom ends. I'm okay. Not. I have a dentist who is a big fan of the Dolphins as well, and that was our thing. When I'd go to the dentist, he'd be like, "What's up, Keith?" And he would just start talking football at me.
You're enough of a fan of the Miami Dolphins that if their season, if they're clearly not going to make the playoffs, or if they're just not looking good, even if they are going to make, that kind of ends your interest in the season, mostly?
No. Football specifically, I don't want to go too off in a weird tangent, but with football, I have a very specific thing. Football fell by the wayside for me because there's just too many other things in my life. And so what I do is I join in at like conference final weekends. So the first weekend where there's four games on the weekend. So there's
increase.
Yeah, two games Saturday, two games Sunday, and there till the end of the season, I watch all of those playoffs. That's just a decision I made based on the time and other sports
trying
that are
to
happening.
Balance all trying of the balance. Sports viewing.
When the Dolphins are on TV, I watch them. Otherwise, I don't even seek them out. But I certainly don't pay attention to like their training camps and who they're going to draft. Like, I'm not that level of a fan. I was at one point. I was a player, right? I was a running back. And so I was saying about Dan Marino, that's why I love Dan Marino, is because some of us out there, you know who you are, love the thing the most that they can't themselves do.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Some people will just relate to people because they can do it, but other people go, how does he throw the ball that well? And Dan Marino is a pure passer.
And how does he act so well?
Oh, yeah. Ace Ventura.
I don't mean an Ace Ventura. I just mean, how does he conduct himself so well?
Well, the fact that we have these isotoner gloves here on the table proves how effective he's been at acting like he loves isotoner gloves.
Can you tell me, I'm just really wanting to extrapolate this because we haven't discussed it before. I hope it's interesting to the listenership.
I was just going
to
say, my wife is hating this right now.
Yeah, she's working some
sports.
References to Game of Thrones.
I love
or
you,
something.
Honey. I'm sorry that we're talking about sports.
We'll get through
it.
Even though
actually she likes football. She gets a big kick out of
it. Or, you know,
collisions.
But the thing is, we might be able to find some things within this conversation that don't rely on somebody caring. See, I'm not interested to talk about when did the Dolphins last win the championship.
Yeah. It's not about,
I'm trying to understand the level of enthusiasm and the investment that people make in teams. Because that's what I'm going through right now with the Blue Jays. It means a lot to me. And I'm noticing how much it matters to me. And I'm also recognizing it's not necessarily a good thing. So I want to extrapolate a little bit further. Let's break this down a bit more. What are your top five team sports for viewing? And can you rank them? And I'm talking about the amount of time and effort you invest in each of these sports, in viewing
sports,
them and tracking them. So I'm going to assume, and I might be wrong, but I'm going to assume number one would be soccer.
Yeah.
Because I know what happens during the World Cup for you. It's just all encompassing.
Yeah.
So is soccer's number one?
I think it probably still is, yeah.
So
I watched the Champions League in soccer. That's a good example of where I'm not invested in a team because my favorite team in soccer, and this happens sometimes as well if you're a lifelong fan of sport, is your team isn't necessarily a good team for a long time. In the British Premier League, the Barclays Premier League, the English Premier League, my favorite team was the Blackburn Rovers when I was growing up, and they got demoted. So when you don't finish high enough in the English Premier League, they toss you out and bring up other teams.
Yeah, that's more complicated.
And so my favorite team is never in the top tier. And so maybe that's even where the germ of watching just the good games came from. I don't have any investment, so I just watch the good games. So
very different in soccer versus the American Big Four. Are the Big Four American team sports the next 2, 3, 4, 5? Or what are? I really want to break down the list, and then we can zoom in, Keith, on each sport. But let's talk about.
Well, hockey's number two for me.
Hockey's number two. Okay, what's number three?
Not number one. It's probably still the NFL.
NFL?
Yeah, I would think. Not baseball. I hardly ever watch baseball anymore.
NBA is number four?
I don't think so. NBA is probably number five. What the hell? There's got to be something else that's number four.
I guess that's not a team sport.
I do watch tennis, not a team sport. There's got to be something else in there. I mean, I watch a lot of stuff. I watch like Gaelic football and Aussie rules and stuff. I watch rugby. So
okay, so miscellaneous world sports.
Yeah, maybe I can't bring it. High Lie. I watch a lot of High Lie.
You know what that is? Highlights of High Lie or just High Lie?
I only watch some of the highlights, so I watch just the High Lie of High Lie.
Baseball is certainly at the bottom of the list of priorities. There's a lot of games in baseball. You know, there's 162 in the regular season. There's about 30 or so in spring training. And then if you make the playoffs and make it all the way through, and if they were all game 7 series, game 5 series, it could be like well over 200 games.
It's nuts.
That's a lot of games.
Luckily you spend a lot of time in baseball standing perfectly still.
Yeah, or sitting.
Yeah.
In the dugout.
Mm-hmm. That helps a lot, I think, in terms of that. Can you imagine a hockey team playing twice as many games as they play in a season.
Do you think a baseball pitcher makes the most amount of money doing the least amount of work? What I mean by that, when I say least amount of work, I'm talking about work on the playing field. I'm not speculating the work that's done off the field, mm-hmm. but I'm saying relative to the amount they get paid versus what's happening on the field. Because if you're a starting pitcher, you're doing 30 starts a year.
Mm-hmm.
If you're, I guess if you're a football quarterback, you're doing 16 games.
Yeah. I think pitcher's a weird choice because pitching is so bloody hard on you. It really messes up their arms. There's a reason they rest for 4 and 5 and 6 days after they pitch. It's because it really messes you up. And you have to be not just a good pitcher. You have to be structured a certain way. You have to have a body that can withstand that. It's doing something as hard as you can with mostly one part of your body over and over again. And because of that, a lot of even the best pitchers who are able to handle that stress have to have surgery. They have to have, like, Tommy John surgery is really common, and shoulder problems, and...
lots of pressure, too, and that's the point I was going to make.
Yeah, hair loss.
By no means am I saying that they don't deserve it, or well, it's a whole other conversation, but I'm thinking about that. I'm thinking, my God, like, some of these guys are making almost $1 million per appearance, and sometimes their appearance might result in the team winning. Mm-hmm. Other times they might blow it and they still get paid.
Well, they're important. We've
talked
before about the most important.
But the trade-off to that is the stakes are so high because you're only as good as you do in a given season.
Yeah, it's one of the most important positions in all of sports. So I think it's hard to say that they don't earn their money. They get hurt.
Yeah,
it wears them out. They have to focus. All that pressure. And it matters. It's on their backs like a goaltender, right, in hockey or something.
Folks, the show is Now We're Talking. I'm your host, Jeff Bryant, with Keith Kennedy, as always. We've hijacked our own show. Turn into
talking
kind of sports talk. Talking a little bit sports talk. And the reason we're doing that is because, for me, I don't know if you can relate or not, but I've become heavily invested in the Blue Jays. Today have clinched an opportunity. They're going to play in the playoffs. They're going to do an AL, American League, wild card playoff game. That's been hard fought. They were stinking it up the last few weeks, so it was in question. That matters to me. I'm noticing how much it matters to me. I don't think it's healthy, and so I thought, why not talk about that with Keith? Now, I don't know if that's of interest to you, but you know, if you want to give us a call, you can call us at 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR.
Yeah,
and
talk sports.
We can talk sports, or we can talk not talking sports. We can talk, hey, stop talking sports.
Yeah, that'd be fine too. Because I think we both know there's something more interesting than the sport itself. There's lots of people who can talk statistics on sports and analyze things, but there is something really interesting about our investment. I think that's the word you're using, and it's a correct word.
Let's talk
word.
About the investment that fanatics and make in sports. Don't call us and talk about the games. Call us and tell us, do you hate sports? Do you love sports? Does it dominate your time? Or do you want to avoid it at all costs?
Because that's interesting. I mean, I've gone through that transition where I used to watch everything, and now I can't. And
are you tapering down?
Oh, yeah, I have been for years. Just like I used to watch football every Sunday. I was one of those guys. I didn't miss Monday Night Football from, like, the age of 10 to the age of 20.
Now, I know that you have some... I don't have cable TV, right? So I don't have the PVR where you tape it, you watch it. I've never had that. So when I watch sports, it's usually been streaming it on the internet, on my computer. But when I visit my parents, for example, they do have PVR. And what I realized this past week is, my God, let's say with baseball in particular, this is a beautiful thing. Now, if the game starts at 4, why would you do that? Sit down at 5 o'clock and fast forward through all of the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least. If not, with baseball, you could fast, like, let's get to the next pitcher.
Well, I watch.
Do you do that
well,
when you watch
you know
sports?
I watch the, I think I told you this, I watch the 30-minute thing oftentimes. So there's like I think it's Sportsnet, they have a...
The condensed game.
Blue Jays in 30.
Is it pitch by pitch?
No, not at all. It's just a highlight. It's like a 30-minute highlight package of the whole game, all of the major points
the
of the game.
Plays.
So if you don't have the time to watch a 3-hour baseball game...
That's nice.
Then you just watch 30 minutes.
I was thinking the ideal for me in watching a baseball game, if I want to catch every pitch and therefore every play, even the ones that are ultimately irrelevant, but still give you context for the game, I was finding myself fast-forwarding to the next pitch. And there was times where you're shaving off 20 seconds. So what I would like is for somebody to take the game and do all that for me.
So I could just watch every
50-minute version of the game where you see every pitch. You don't know what's going to happen. But it's like, okay, here's the pitch. He's fouled it off. And here's the pitch.
it's funny for me to sound like a purist right now, but mm-hmm. for me, baseball is like the one top sport, not the one sport, but the top sport on a list of sports that you have to watch every second of to get invested in baseball.
But not the commercials, right?
Not the commercials. Yeah, okay. Hell with commercials. I have enough pit stick and
you do
desire to own fancy cars.
Because you've seen all those commercials.
Yeah.
You spent a lot of time in the past before BVR.
Loaded up. I went, I do want to smell like a waterfall, and I went to Costco.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think baseball is like, the only way baseball is really interesting for me is if I care about what's going on in between the pitches. And that's not true of all sport. Like even football, which is another one of those sports, it's high up on that list of things that you want to pay attention to all the details. Especially if you understand and have played the sport, it's really fun. I actually skip through a bunch of stuff. I do that with football because there's a button on my PVR that skips ahead 30 seconds, and that's about the amount of time it takes between football plays because you got a 40-second runoff on the clock. And so I skip from snap to snap and watch a football game in like an hour or less. And it's awesome when you don't have time otherwise.
As we're talking about this, I'm thinking probably for some people, the opportunity to sit there and watch the game, the whole point is they want it to be 3 hours long.
Exactly, yeah. Like, because they're a real
same
fan.
Same thing with golf.
There are
you know,
true
it's like,
fans
for me, I'm
out
thinking,
there who really
golf,
want to experience
like,
it.
I can see I used to play golf, again, when I was a kid. I can see the appeal. But part of what's not appealing is it takes up like 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And what other pastimes do people have that occupy a five-hour block of time? If you watch a movie, mm-hmm. I don't know, the things
well,
that
I can,
you go
yeah,
bowling or something, you're not going to go bowling for
yeah.
5 hours.
Yeah, well, think about that. Think about, like, watching
But I think my point was, I think people actually, you know, historically, I think there's the element of, like, the old boys getting together, getting away from their wives for 4 or 5 hours. And I wonder if that's true of sports, too, where they're like, no, I want it to be 4 hours.
Yeah, I just can't imagine. Like, think about the amount of things you could do. So if you watched every baseball game, so I've had years where I've watched every single Canucks game. And let's just use that as an example. That's like 3 hour commitment 82 times a year. Think about it, takes me probably 3 or 4 games to read an audiobook, right?
It's not a good use of time.
No, if you could read
from a certain vantage point.
That's 20, like maybe but 20 or 30 books I could have read in the time it took me to watch
final,
those hockey games.
The final point I want to make on this subject while we're talking about it is where I'm at, I could see watching every single game of the year. Let's talk about the Canucks. Let's talk about 2011. If the outcome is tasty and rich and satisfying, even if they get to game 7 and lose, it's a rich experience in the playoffs. But what is it like to watch 80 games when they finish with a like sub 500 record?
I'll tell you what it's
and
like.
And they're not even, do you watch the games even when it's clear they won't make the playoffs?
Well, because they were so good for so long, I felt like, that investment was something that I owed them. Like when they started to flounder, I felt like I should still watch it all. But I got to tell you, man, last season, about three quarters of the way through the season, I bailed entirely.
Because it felt pointless.
It felt pointless. And I was like, well, now they're just playing all the young guys to rebuild, and that's fine. But I'm used to them being competitive, and I got accustomed to not being disappointed by the result.
Is that a shift in you in the past with that team or another team? Would you see the season through even when you know
that's definitely a shift based on like adult stuff, not having as much time and going, of course I want to keep watching and being a good fan, but
screw that.
I mean, screw that. But it comes down to, and it's just admitting that to yourself. Like, there was a time when I was a good fan and now I'm just not a good fan.
How did you feel when they lost that game 7 against the Boston Bruins in 2011?
That's a very specific situation.
They're that close.
That wasn't what I felt. I mean, I didn't like that series at all because, and this is not in hindsight, like one of those complainy things like they screwed us, but that whole playoffs, it was really poorly handled in the officiating sense. This might be getting a bit too sporty, so I'll keep it quick. Mm-hmm. But there were some suspensions, things that were handed down. They were sort of changing the way that they were handling all of those discipline issues. And there were like memos that were being sent out in the middle of playoffs instructing the referees to referee the games differently. Like
crazy.
Really strange things were happening. And in that final series, that was a year where the Canucks represented the kind of sports team that were very skilled, and the Boston Bruins represented the kind of sports team that were very physical.
Brute force.
And so by the time they got to that playoffs, oftentimes in hockey, if you're not a hockey fan, it's a very interesting sport in the sense that there's a whole philosophy around hockey that you should just let them play. Like, quotes, let the boys play. Let them work it out on the ice. So what they're saying is, don't referee it too much. Don't call too many penalties. And so that happens in the playoffs in hockey where they just slowly reduce the amount of penalties. But when you have a skilled team like the Canucks versus an intimidating physical team like the Bruins, if you stop calling penalties, the advantage tips towards the physical team.
Right.
And so that was, that whole series was watching that happen without being too sour about it. I was like, this is not going well. This is not going to work. When the Bruins would really get on our skilled guys in front of the net, punch them in the face, and they were like starting to finally lose their cool, right? Because the Canucks for three series had just let people punch them in the face, and then they get power plays and they score on you, and that's how they punish you. And when they weren't getting those calls anymore, they started to get frustrated, and that frustration led to them losing that series. So with your watching, when you're watching it, you could sense it coming, and that final game seven was just kind of a dead, slow, like, oh, this is already kind of over. Whoever scores first is probably going to win this hockey game.
Wow. Excellent analysis of that. That was, for me, I'm such a casual bandwagon jumper that was lost to me at the time. If you're just tuning in, no, it's not 2011. It's not, you're not caught in a time warp. I've specifically asked Keith to just address that series back in 2011 when the Vancouver Canucks very nearly won the Stanley Cup, something they've never done. Is that correct?
That was tough. They never have. And that was the year. I mean, they were the best team in the league that year for sure. But asterisk, they didn't win the cup, so I guess Boston was the best team in the league that year. That's how it works.
And if you're just tuning in, the reason I'm asking Keith these questions isn't because we've become a talk radio, sports talk radio program. It's maybe too soon to say, but I'm just trying to understand fanaticism and fandom because I have become a fanatic of the Blue Jays. Now, we're almost halfway through the show, so maybe we want to move on to something
sure,
else in the show.
I mean, we could talk sports forever.
Exactly. We could get caught up, and I know we've got a few other things we want to do, so let's find out what's happening this week in the news.
Jeff and Keith present this week's news. Now, topical.
Okay, so what happened in the news? I don't know. There's a few things we wanted to talk about this week.
Well, we get into the entertainment thing if you want. Is
sure.
that cool?
Yeah. Because Brangelina, let's do it.
Oh.
Just kidding.
Well,
we talk about that so much off the air. Why would we do that now?
That was 6 hours of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually couldn't sleep last night because we were trying to understand why.
Why, God?
Yeah.
Why?
No. No, that's not what you're going to say.
No. This is the fall season for TV, which is, I know it's an interesting topic for you and I because we're both, I think, big proponents of the whole TV seasons are over. Netflix and things like that.
Well, it's changing really fast.
It's a year-round thing now, TV. It's like the elections in the States. It never stops.
That's true. That's true. And that's so much so. And as I mentioned, I don't have cable, that actually it was lost on me that this is when all the network shows are starting up because it's actually kind of arbitrary, the beginning of the cycle for any given
show. Totally.
And
I have to connect to it through my, we get Entertainment Weekly magazine, the physical magazine. Okay. We get it sent to our house. And it's something, it's like, it connects me in a way to the way things used to be. We used to get the TV guide and then we like kind of upgraded to EW. And so when you get that, you get like the actual physical listings in your hand. And I can look at it and reference it.
So as much as things are changing, there still is. It's September into October.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of new shows they're trying out on
the
networks.
Shows. And it's funny. Yeah, it's interesting because we've changed a lot of how we approach it. We used to go, oh, look at all these new shows. And then we'd try to check out all those new shows.
Yeah, but, give them a shot.
Yeah, but now with how great all of the cable networks have become, it's changed. We don't check out as many new shows. If it's on, if you're on ABC, pal, Mr. Person Who Made a Show, and you're on ABC, there's a good chance, I don't care what it's about or how good it's been reviewed before, I'm not going to bother.
It's going to be inferior to cable shows?
Yeah, it's just going to be inferior.
Because
it's not always
censorship? Is that part of the reason?
For me, well, one of the reasons is that I love naked breasts and spurting blood.
Is it becoming inherently more difficult for network shows to compete when their hands are tied by the restrictions of
I think
network
so.
Television?
I think all good shows are character centric, right? So of course you can have a great story that doesn't have those trappings.
Sure.
But if your show's like Pretty Good and you have those trappings, I'm going to go to that network.
Plus from a creative standpoint, when right away if you've got column A and column B, and column A is like, here's all the things you can't do because we're worried that people can't handle it. And column B is like, oh, don't worry about it. Just do your thing.
Yeah.
It's bound to have a detrimental
effect.
Yeah,
and it also feels like you're giving creative control to the actual creatives. Right, even though that might not necessarily be the case. I'm sure HBO is run and oftentimes similar to the way ABC is run or whatever, not to pick on ABC, but they're just the first three letters in the alphabet.
Exactly, so it's easy to remember. Is that a station? Yes,
It
is.
An order of who needs to be picked on there.
BDE, that's not station.
But ABC, right. Yeah, so it feels like in places like HBO and Showtime and AMC, it feels like they're creator-driven shows. It feels a bit more like it's someone's vision that you're watching.
Right.
It's a piece of art coming from them.
While no doubt they have a team of writers or co-creators, probably not to the same extent that the network shows do.
Yeah, you think less
think
interference?
They're more like assembly line manufactured in the network.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily the case. And some of the best TV shows that I've seen in the last few years on networks are clearly not like that. They've really given over and letting creative people do their thing. But this whole idea, I don't know what you call it, like this showrunner thing, like Ryan Murphy's, I think his name is, and Shonda Rhimes. Like, there's these people out there now who like have multiple shows.
Right.
And that's the thing they do. And
like David Botchko.
Yeah, and it's just like anything.
Or was it Stephen Botchko?
Steve, that sounds right.
I'll look it up. Keep talking.
I just have a tendency to assume that if you have a bunch of different shows, then they're probably not as good as that one guy who had that one show and focused on that. Now, that's probably unfair.
Like a law of diminishing returns?
Something like that.
Stephen Botchko, creator of NYPD Blue, of course.
So I find that I just have a tendency to go towards those other ones. And there's just not as many. There's not as many new shows on things like HBO and Showtime.
So all that being said, are there shows that are debuting on the networks that you're paying attention to?
Yeah, that's funny that it was insightful that you asked me that.
Thank you.
Because that's exactly what I wanted to get to. I watched I think I've only checked a 3 or 4.
Okay.
And the one big hit, Son of Zorn, I'm really into.
Okay.
Which is the new Fox, Jason Sudeikis voiced character. He plays a cartoon character, like a barbarian like He-Man, in a real world context.
Sure.
And it's ripe for comedy.
And you've seen it?
Yes.
And you liked it?
Yes. Thumbs up for that. But, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm curious. I mean, I want to hear the other ones. I don't mean to jump the gun, but I can't contain my enthusiasm asking you about Designated Survivor, A, because it's the only one that I'm aware of out of probably like 30. And also, we know that you're a big fan of Kiefer.
Yeah, huge fan.
So I'm really, I can't contain myself as you go through this. Let's cut to the chase.
Okay.
Do you care about it? Have you seen it? What's the deal?
That's, again, you're very insightful today, Jeff.
Thank you.
Nicely done. Nicely done. Yeah. I didn't check it out.
And you won't?
I haven't.
Okay.
I was going to
because
it was Kiefer. And then I showed my wife that I'd set it up to tape on the PVR. And my wife went, yeah, but it's probably not going to be any good. And that's all it takes. All I need is a little kernel of doubt, and I just jump at, because there's so many things to check out and so many things to watch and only so many hours in the day.
It's still on the list, but it's kind of jumping below.
Yeah, and a couple of great, I guess I remember back in the day, anything below a 5 out of 10, it wouldn't check out. Now I'm cutting like 7s and 8s, because there's only so much time in the day. And so with this one, I wanted to check it out, and apparently it's good. People really like it, but I passed on it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I prioritized some other things on some of the other networks. But the one that I did check out, the major one, which I was surprised, is The Exorcist television show.
Interesting.
I really, this whole thing about taking a movie and bringing it to TV is very popular right now.
It used to be a thing, and still is to a certain degree. If there's a successful television show, how can we make this into a feature film? Mm-hmm. Like the be-all and end-all, a feature film. It seems like increasingly there's old properties, feature film properties, that are being like decades after the fact. They're trying to turn them into TV shows. I know Lethal Weapon is another example.
Yeah, that's another
example. Now, The Exorcist, you're telling me they've made a television show based on the film, which is about 40 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they went
for it. How's
that
working out?
And it's funny because...
See, that's something you think, if they're going to do it right, they would do it on cable. If it's on network TV, it's probably atrocious.
And so
especially when there's horror involved and you don't want those restrictions we talked about.
Yeah, and even though The Exorcist may be the greatest horror movie ever made, and it is very suspenseful, and it is full of subtlety and character building and a wonderful story, it's also pretty full of gore and stuff that you can't show on TV.
Right.
So my wife and I were skeptical that this would be an acceptable endeavor. And I just read an article that said, well, we found some ways to do some pretty horrific things. And they specifically mentioned one thing. And I was like, okay, I'll check it out. And getting past my bias was a good thing because I've only watched the first episode, so who knows. But often, as you know, in the pilot season typical network scenario, the pilot show is often the worst.
Okay.
It's the one with the most exposition, forced exposition.
And oftentimes it's a self-contained thing that was created without assurances of it being
and
a show.
And it feels like it needs to introduce all of the elements and all
right.
of the characters.
Right. So it's hard to judge by that.
And one of the best things about these network shows, these cable shows, is that they don't have to do that. They just make
a series of six.
And they know that they don't have to address that until episode 3.
Yeah,
and they let it happen naturally.
That is interesting.
So with The Exorcist, there was a lot of things that were signaling that I shouldn't bother, and the first episode was very, very solid.
And I'm curious to know, was it good in the sense that it satisfied the universe of that film for you, or was it just its own thing that was good?
No, nothing at all about the universe, because if for those who are fans of the movie, The Exorcist universe is a pretty broad one,
mm-hmm.
Even though the movie takes place in a very small place.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about the idea of Christian mythology, the idea of a devil or demons. So you can take that and go a lot of places without having to connect to that movie. And I think they have a mind to a little bit, but they're not being hamstrung by that at all. So obviously, you need a young priest and an old priest, and you need somebody who's possessed. And I think that's pretty much all they're worrying about.
Do they follow the narrative of that film? Or
so
do they...
far, not.
Okay.
So far, it's been totally separate. So yeah, this is
an interesting question, right? If you're going to, as I say, to take a legendary commodity,
do you copy it or
a
not?
Legendary, yeah. Exactly. You have a few different options,
mm-hmm.
and you've seen with other attempts to do this kind of thing, in either direction, TV to film or film to TV, that it can be a horrible idea to try to do the same thing or the correct idea.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, this one did my favorite way, which was to take what's great about it, do their own thing, and then just a few nods here and there. There's a great shot of an exorcism that happened in the past,
mm-hmm.
and they show the stairs, the famous stairwell, the really long, steep stairwell from The Exorcist,
mm-hmm.
which for those who've seen the movie know how iconic that is.
Sure.
So it's that kind of stuff. For like the fans, you go, oh, it's the stairwell.
There it is.
But the show itself is not relying on any of that.
Okay.
It had a couple of good characters, a good idea. It's well written. Who knows how good the story is going to be moving forward? And I might come back here in 3 weeks and say I gave up on it. That
sure.
does happen.
But off to a good start.
Off to a good start.
And
yeah.
on this topic, we've got a couple more minutes, but it sounded like there's a couple other shows as well. We've mentioned a couple.
I got some
other ones you've checked out?
Some non-network things coming up that I'm pretty excited
about.
Okay,
so these are the main network ones. The Sudeikis one and the Exorcist one.
Yeah, and I think,
are you aware of this Lethal Weapon thing? Is that something that...
Yeah, I'm not interested, really, because I am aware of it. And they tried to do it with, not Shanghai Noon, what's the name of the bloody movie? The one that Jackie Chan and Mike...
Oh, Rush Hour.
Yeah, they tried to do it with Rush Hour recently. And
didn't work.
That's a perfect example of the kind of thing that you know they're going to try to connect so much to the movie. The characters are going to be very similar, and they're going to try to... use what worked about that, and it's just a completely different format.
I'm kind of intrigued to talk about TV because I haven't had cable TV for, I don't know how long, like 15 years or something. So I'm still aware of it peripherally if I'm at somebody's house or something. But like the fact that The Simpsons is on after all these years. I mean, I remember when The Simpsons was on the Tracy Ullman show. I remember when it was a sketch, basically, another show. And I remember when it was a big deal in the early 90s. And I like the fact that it's still around after all these years. I'm pleased. That's something I remember from TV that's still on TV. How much longer is that going to be on, do you think?
I don't know.
As long as they want to?
I mean, as you and I, let's be honest, we both are... huge fans of The Simpsons as youths. And
there's a golden era.
And the golden era ended, and we went to hell with this show, and we haven't watched it since, right?
Sure.
Pretty much.
Well, I just didn't have cable anymore also.
Yeah.
But there was a golden era, I feel like.
For sure. Like season, like, you know, arguably 3-8, 2-7, somewhere
in there.
Yeah,
or like 92-95 or something.
Yeah, there's some good stuff. The hockey game.
We should talk about that in another episode.
We should have a whole Simpsons episode.
But we should specifically talk about a golden era of comedy between like 92 and 96.
Oh, yeah. When Conan O'Brien... was writing for things.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, Simpsons, SNL.
When Conan was like on the cutting edge, when his show was the weirdest thing, coolest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah, it was an interesting era.
Yeah, it was cool. SNL was cool. That
and
too.
Also when Letterman first, I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff here. Like when Letterman was first had his late show, he had a lot to prove, so he put a lot of effort
into
it.
And again, that's subversion, right?
And for a year or two, it was really, really great. And then it became pretty good, mm-hmm. but the effort wasn't there anymore, so it was good enough. But there was a period of time that for me, looking back at it retrospectively, and even at the time, I thought, well, I mean, this is an era where I'm impressionable and enjoy comedy, so I perceive it that way. But no, I look back at that time, I'm like, no, there was a specific number of seasons for Seinfeld and The Simpsons, and for me, it's arguable, but for SNL and Letterman, and it all converged right around the time that I went through puberty.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, remember the Dana Carvey one?
I thought it was just me going through puberty. I just was inclined.
No, I agree. There was a wonderful period of comedy there. Dana Carvey won an Emmy for SNL, which is, he was only the third person to ever win an Emmy in that time period, and he got his own show, remember?
That's right,
and
the Dana Carvey show.
It didn't last long, but every one of us watched that show, and we loved it.
Dana Carvey is brilliant.
Yes. He is.
You know, it's like, he's had an interesting experience. I mean, Dana Carvey's is 60 years old or 61 years old, so he's been around for a while. But he's such a youthful guy. Yeah. I think he's still in his 30s or 40s.
He's a sprite.
But he was obviously a major presence on SNL.
Yeah.
But he went away for a while. He did that show Master of Disguise around 2003, and he made a conscious choice. Probably it was a good time. He wanted to spend more time with his family. That's what he said. I believe it. I think it was also a good career move to take a step back, but. You kind of forgot about Dana Carvey, and now he comes back. And when you see him interview, he's actually like the only other comedic figure, maybe you could say Jim Carrey as well, but he's kind of Robin Williams-esque, and that it's just effortless for him to be entertaining.
Yeah,
like, between his impressions, he's very smart. He plays piano, guitar.
I was gonna say the piano. That's
drums.
That's a great example of his one of his most famous things is the Chopping Broccoli song he plays on the piano.
Yeah.
That's just a dude being funny.
And you know what's
There's nothing technically sound about that comedy.
You know what's
that's a dude who's funny.
You see a bunch of people doing Trump impressions. I know Alec Baldwin just debuted his Trump impression last night. Jimmy Fallon. A lot of people do, and I would say they all do a decent job. They put on the makeup, and they kind of have a general sense of his affectation.
Yeah, Johnny Depp.
But I'm telling you, Dana Carvey, without even like committing to doing it in a performance, just like when he's interviewed in a show, without any of the makeup,
does it so
much better, man. Mm-hmm. Like, wait, if you put him next to Jimmy Fallon or Alec Baldwin or Daryl Hammond or whoever else has done it. It's like
Taron Killam.
It's like twice as good. Like even just him, it's because he really is attuned to how those physical gestures.
This is a whole conversation too, because me and my wife were just talking about how impressions work. Because I have
you got your wife back into the show.
Yeah,
I've got about sports. Now we're talking Dana Carvey.
This is for you, babe. I was talking about this last night because we were watching Trump do his impression on the SNL season premiere last night, which is another thing I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
On our notes, so good segue.
Thank you.
I was watching Alec Baldwin do the impression. I really liked what he was doing. I got a kick out of it. He really sleazed it up. And I remember thinking, I can't remember what prompted me to think this, but what I like about, that's what it was. It was Daryl Hammond doing Bill Clinton. I was like, I want to believe that they just wanted him to do Clinton because he does the best Bill Clinton and let someone else do Trump. And I thought, why does he do the best Bill Clinton? I thought, it's because impressions are not just a thing. Like, yeah, you can do that and talk like that and with your thumb. But that's not the whole impression. And what I thought of was Kevin Spacey. When he does walking, he just does this for every sentence. And it's good.
Yeah.
And you like it.
Yeah.
But it's not the whole impression. And it's just sometimes there's this fine line of like being entertaining and
that was
like
a good impression. Of you being Kevin Spacey being
I was doing Kevin Spacey. Whereas there's
to acknowledge that.
There's more. There's other guys who really give her on Kevin on Christopher Walken, right? And they try to find those nuanced moments, and that's why Hammond is such a good impressionist because he really sells into it. You get that feeling that he's in that thing, and it's I don't have a point to make. It's just interesting to have a conversation about the different ways it's approached. I remember they just got rid of Jay Farrow, and he was a perfect impressionist, just doing incredible impressions, and yet sometimes it was so good that it wasn't entertaining. I was like, there's Kanye. I wasn't entertained by it. But then I remember Bill Hader, who I think is one of the greatest performers in the history of SNL, and he just, the first time he came on, he did Al Pacino, and you were like, this is amazing, and it was just as perfect in its way. But some guys just have a way of making it so fun. What is that magical thing? And for someone like me who likes the idea of being an impressionist, but I'm not all that great at it, I wish I understood what that magical entertainment factor is.
And I'm just trying to figure this out as we're discussing it. But I think that it's probably the case that there's some people who can capture the voice of that person very well.
Mm-hmm.
Or there's some people who can capture the essence of that person and work quick on their feet to find jokes.
Yeah, it's very different.
And there's different, you know what I mean? There's probably a few different elements, but it's rarely the case that somebody can encapsulate all those elements.
Yeah.
And I think that's the
good
argument
point
for why Dana Carvey is just you realize, oh my God, this I forgot about how great he is.
Yeah, he gets it.
It's not
from
just
all angles,
that he,
yeah.
It's not just that he can change his voice, say not gonna or whatever.
Yeah.
He can actually find the jokes and work quick on his feet, deliver scripted material.
Mm-hmm.
But when you see him in panel interviews on talk shows and stuff, like he can just riff. I mean, like a Robin Williams figure.
I want someone, one of our fans out there to maybe put together a little thing for us where we just get our little half impersonations we did in that segment, all those tiny half impersonations, put those together for us.
And I don't want to be too presumptuous, but could you animate it too?
Yeah.
Animate
that'd be
something.
Great. And make us look real. Make us look really muscular.
And really invest hours in this. Now, Keith, it's about 3/4 of the way through the show. I'm enjoying our conversation, but I know that it's become a bit of a tradition the past couple weeks of the show, last couple episodes of the show. you've contributed an essay.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've got prepared for this week's edition?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so do you want me to set it up in any way? Do you need me to put on, maybe do a quick change?
Well, I think...
Let me put my hat on.
Put your hat on. Give me those gloves.
Okay,
put
those gloves on.
What I think... these are the callback gloves.
Yeah.
I got a new phone.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's right. You got
After three years,
SE.
Got the iPhone SE.
Oh, cool.
Which is a great phone. It's got like I call it Sony Guts, which is a quote from the Zohan. Don't mess with the Zohan
good
movie.
Good guts? Does that mean good?
No, Sony guts.
Sony
it's like a thing
guts.
They say in a movie where they go, it's like, it looks like it's a machine that doesn't have any, you know, it's not a brand name, but it has Sony guts in it.
Right, the good stuff. That's what that means.
Anyway, that's for the Zohan fan out there. The phone is a 5-sized phone, but it has 6S guts in it. You know, it has like, it's a really
that's
good
right.
processor.
That's right.
Mostly the same as the new.
The housing is comparable to what you had before.
Exactly.
Which
I didn't
want to
go too
4,
big because I had the 4.
But it has the speed and the camera and it has the thumb scanning thing and
so, I mean,
all the modern stuff.
So that prompted an incident.
Ah.
And that's what the essay is about this week.
Okay, folks, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. My name is Jeff Bryant. This is Now We're Talking on a Sunday evening. It's fall. It's arrived. I'm here with Keith Kennedy. As always, he got a new phone, and he was inspired by that experience to pen this essay. Here we go.
I'm a chronic pocket checker. Watch me on my daily routine. Hide and hunt me. Buy some decent binoculars, and you'll see a man caught in a disco nightmare. A man playing patty cake with his chest and his thighs. If your binoculars are good enough, you'll see the sweat on my brow. The intense look of consternation as it creases my face in that singular moment when I think, for an insignificant millisecond, that I've lost something. Wallet. Keys. Phone. Right? Everyone knows the routine. Not everyone performs it with quite the intensity, vehemence, and fear of a small prey animal living near a predator's lair. But we all have a version. A friend once described his least favorite feeling in the world to me as the one where you think, for a second, you've lost your phone, until you realize it's in your other hand. We live in fear of losing things, as all humans have before us. Our losses may be more trivial on a grand scale, and though many of us understand that, it doesn't diminish the horror we connect with inconvenience or a loss of money. This little story is more about inconvenience. I got a new phone. In the box, there was a nice new set of earbuds. On my way out the door for a physio appointment the other day, I glanced at the new earbuds. Nah, I said, and grabbed my old crumpled up pair. I was wearing a pair of shorts that didn't have the particular pocket that my earbuds usually live in, so I stuffed them into my hoodie. For those who know of my hoodie's reputation for losing things, today the object in question went into the other pocket, the safer one. I went to physio, and while there, transferred my buds to the pocket of my borrowed gym shorts, the stylish ones they offer you when you show up in less than appropriate garb for physicality. Because I have a new phone, I spent the whole 37-minute stationary bike ride with my head buried in it, poking at settings, researching apps, and trying to figure out how to get the bugger to work. I never used my earbuds, and when I went to change afterward, I gave them not a thought. Page turn.
I should have done the page turn thing.
Yeah, I forgot to take the staple out.
That'd be a way for me to stay involved.
Yeah, I should have got you to take the staple out beforehand.
Give me the last sentence again.
Page turn.
Wait, before you do it. Page turn. Now give me the last sentence.
Yeah. I never used my earbuds, and when I went to change afterward, gave them not a thought.
Page turn.
Down the street, closer to home, I went to the local Safeway. I wandered about the store for a time, collected chicken and strawberries, specifically, and went to the self-checkout. There, waiting for the receipt to be spit out like a computer in an old sci-fi movie, a machine that has been asked a very important question about the meaning of life or the existence of God, I performed my half-Macarena jig, tapping at my various pockets. Wallet, keys, phone, right? Wait, wasn't there something else? The pocket that had contained my earbuds was empty. It took me a long time to figure this out. I went back through every decision I'd made that day, and it all checked out. They shouldn't be gone. Only, I had it. I'd put them in the borrowed shorts. I had no recollection of taking them out and putting them back in my jacket. I'd changed into my street clothes, dumped the black shorts with a neat yellow racing stripe in the laundry basket, buds still inside. Problem solved. I raced from Safeway and headed back to the physiotherapist's office. Only they weren't there. I went through all the dirty laundry in the basket, touching things that so recently touched many sweaty and possibly injured crotches. I dug my hands into the pockets of all the stylish black shorts with the tasteful yellow racing stripe, and I came up with nothing. I must have lost them at Safeway, despite no recollection of transferring the buds from shorts pocket to hoodie pocket. It must have happened. I was wandering around Safeway, and they'd fallen out. Simple. So I retraced my steps through Safeway, and when I came up empty, I went to customer service and told my story. The man at the desk reached into a drawer behind the till and held up a small white tumbleweed, a glorious set of earbuds that looked exactly as mine had when I'd forced them into my pocket on my way out the door that morning. "That's them," I said, with a smile that held all my glee. I was a person who solved problems. Everything was right in the world.
Page turn.
I hadn't lost my cool, hadn't gotten upset, and I'd been rewarded with the return of my possession. It wasn't lost on me at any time that I had a brand new set at home. This probably kept me from becoming a raging lunatic, but I deserve at least some credit. That night, the physio office called to tell me they'd found my earbuds. The little buggers had gone through the washer and the dryer cycles, stuck in the pocket of some black and yellow shorts. I went to the bathroom where my wife was in the tub, holding the ball of earbud wire hate in my hand like it was a dead rat I'd found. These aren't mine. They've been in someone else's ears. There is no point to this story, no moral to speak of. There's hardly even much of an ending, but did I not just say that they'd been in someone else's ears? The next day, I brought the bastard imposters back to Safeway, told my silly story, and the tumbleweed of lost wire was dropped back into the drawer. Who knows how long they'd been there? Who knows how long they will be? Better yet, who knows how many ears they felt from the inside? I retrieved my earbuds from the physio, assuming they were dead to the world. What technology in a land where some people are actually employed by companies to make sure their products don't work for too long, that's a real thing, by the way, could withstand the washer and dryer, wet and hot murderers of modern machinery notorious for ending functionality? So with thoughts of the new earbuds in my head, I plugged in those old bastards, the ones I'd confused so easily with the haggard pair in the Safeway customer service drawer, and wouldn't you know it, they blared to life. And everything was right in the world once more. I guess my new packaged earbuds can remain where they are for now, giving me a sense of security that I can use to combat the anxiety of potential inconvenience. And maybe, just maybe, they'll help me stop tapping at myself like I'm being searched for contraband at a routine drug bust.
I'll be honest, I'm not sure the significance of that explosion, but I feel like something should bookend the...
That was so big.
It was a big one, right? Before the show, I was trying to find a sufficient sound effect.
The one you
and
showed
I was
me
really,
before
I don't
was
know,
so
if I
small.
Go ahead and go on YouTube yourself, and I was really struggled to find something, but I think I found the right one there. I don't know what it means. It could mean that it could mean that the way you ended that blew somebody's mind.
Well, that was so good an explosion, I actually feel like the whole thing's been diminished. I'm like, geez, that
Sorry,
wasn't
which
worth
explosion?
That the
That one?
That's the one. That's the one. There's so much rubble in that explosion.
That's what I liked about it. Lots of rubble.
Weird.
So it's, I mean, I was listening to your essay, Keith. It sounds like what I took away from that was if you can't find your earbuds, you can borrow the ones at Safeway.
Yeah,
but it might disgust you.
If there's a moral,
but
here,
it might disgust you when you realize that's what you've done.
There's a drawer at Safeway and in the Marpole Safeway.
Mm.
And if you
I'd
go
like
up there,
think,
and,
I'd like to think all of the Safeways.
Probably, but if you go up there and tell a ridiculous story about your yellow shorts and what you do that day and how you like to touch your pockets, they'll just open the drawer and hand you a pile of white wires
just to make you stop.
Yeah. And the thing I didn't say in that story was that I never actually put those in my ears.
You didn't?
No.
And that must have been a relief.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the world will be a better place when people go wireless? Or will more buds be lost when we go wireless, actually?
I think the world will be a better place when we have something put in our bodies, some sort of metal piece that attaches to our ears. Inside.
What an interesting statement.
A surgical insertion.
Well, that was a moment where I wish somebody had just tuned in. I think that would be a better
they
place.
They probably did, because so many people are tuning out and in at all throughout this whole episode.
A surgical incision utilizing the ear.
Yeah. No, yeah, stick it in us, and then it just gets pumped into our heads. Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. Let's
How
do
long
it.
Until that's going to be the case, do you think?
I don't know. I want it.
Too soon
I want
to say.
It. We were just talking about Apple Pay today, right? How you were sort of saying, am I going to use that? And again, I have a tendency to balk at some of these things.
Yeah, it's like, show it to me when it's great.
Yeah, I want it. Put it in my body. Put the chip in my friggin' arm that does all that for me.
Are you
me.
Ready for that?
Don't make me use all this stupid thumb
would
work.
Would you do that? RFID
I would,
payment?
If that was a thing that could be done safely and cheaply, I would have it in a heartbeat. I
what
would
if
even
it
have
was,
one near my heart.
What if it could only be regular. Implanted in an awkward place like the small of your back?
Like in the back of a Volkswagen?
So I want you to imagine you're paying for things. And you know, like the tap where you tap your credit card or you use Interact.
You have to tap your butt.
And you have to like lift up your body and position it so that the small of your back can scan it.
Well, first of all, that'll show my Guns N' Roses tattoo, my tramp stamp, so I'm totally into that.
Okay. So for you, it would work for that reason.
It's just Duff McKagan, by the way, for all the fans out there.
That would be really strange if the only way to have it implanted was in the small.
I wouldn't care. I honestly, if your question's serious, which I think it is.
Always.
I would expose every part of my body to use that technology, assuming that people understood that they might see a testicle when I needed to pay for something.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's well, I'm glad that we covered that ground.
I'm glad too.
What else is on our list? I mean, I've got a few minutes left, and I don't want to sell ourselves short. We've covered some good ground today, right?
I got a lot of stuff still. If you just want me to throw something out.
Well, I would say we've got a couple minutes, so let's pick something that's succinct.
Okay. Well, here's something succinct because I don't want to be thrown out of the literary community. Mm-hmm. I tried to read Moby Dick for the third time.
You mentioned this before that you're working on it.
This time I tried to audiobook it because twice before I've tried to physically read it and had to give up because I don't like it.
Right.
And I tried to audiobook it and I didn't even get to the halfway point. And
because
I stopped again.
What happened? It's too boring.
I don't like it.
It's boring.
I've read a lot of classics. I can usually put them in, you know, some sort of semblance of where they would have fit in the society at the time, and I can overcome some things. I read Kafka's Metamorphosis this year. I didn't like it, but I can sort of get why it was relevant. And mm-hmm. I do like a lot of classics, or at least some, but I'm just a modern fan. I really like reading and watching things that have built on the things before it. I like seeing that. I like seeing the layers of something. And sometimes when I read classics, I just don't attach to the art. This is an artistic endeavor. Moby Dick is an amazing, fantastic, fanciful, artistic novel, and it doesn't appeal to me.
Is there a possibility of that being entertaining, or is it read at this point in time when you could be watching Kiefer Sutherland Designated Survivor?
Well,
because it's an intellectual experience.
It's funny because I know, because I'm reading A Confederacy of Dunces right now instead, and I'm enjoying that. So it's just some things are everyone says Moby Dick is a wonderful novel, maybe the greatest American novel, so I'm going to assume that those people are right, and this is just a personal thing. But I guess I'm gonna have to accept this, that for whatever reason, the way Moby Dick is written and the kind of story it is and how the characters are, just the way they're built doesn't work for me. This is not my thing. This is not my kind of art. I'm looking at the painting. I don't like the painting. I don't want it in my house. Go away, Moby Dick.
I'm really curious. We'll save this for another time, but I'm really curious to know what the future of literature is. And, you know,
it's me.
It's you. It's you in a room trying to read the classics.
Yeah.
And even you finding it difficult.
It's me rewriting Moby Dick.
Because you're
with cybernetic implants and a bloody whale.
I believe that you have that within you. Folks, we've got another minute or so here, but we just want to take a moment to reflect on what we've learned this week. And you are listening to Now We're Talking on CITR 101.9 FM.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, this week we tried something different. I felt the need to dominate the front half of the show by discussing my fanaticism with sports at the moment. And I'm enjoying it, but I think what I'm discovering is the extent to which I can enjoy it if there's the favorable outcome, the outcome I want.
But you don't want the negative side
of it. It's actually not nearly as much as how angry it makes me feel.
I have a similar thing. I try not to
get that's hard to balance.
Overly invested because
I think if it was even, I think, like, you know, I'm this happy and correspondingly this sad.
Yeah.
But when it's like this happy, and I'm, like, enraged by things not going my way.
It's funny. I find myself detaching from things more and more. Just watching the World Cup finals between Canada and the Team Europe, so the hockey wasn't very good in those finals. And I started thinking, like, well, if Europe actually wins this, I don't think I care. I don't want to feel the disappointment, so I don't care as much. And then when Canada won, I wasn't as exuberant as I was.
I knew that it was unhealthy when it wasn't enough for me to see the competitors eliminated. I mentioned Seattle and Detroit. I actually watched for minutes afterwards looking at the fans in the just like devastated. I mean, like, that could have been
to
me.
Soak in their disappointment.
But it's you instead.
I almost just laid an F-bomb there.
I'm so glad
that
it's you instead. Well, folks, we weren't, the show wasn't available last week because we had extenuating circumstances. I was out of town. But folks, it is a weekly show. We're here every Sunday from 6 to 7. Tune in on 101.9 FM or listen to the show after the fact on the podcast. I'm Jeff. We've got Keith here. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.